This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. Robin Dow is producing. Glad you're starting your week listening to our show. If you're so inclined, give us a call at 877-217-5757. Emails to talk at talklouisiana.org. Signature support for our program comes from Jerry Lane Chevrolet and from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services. Joining us to begin, Gwen Hillier on the right side of the political spectrum, the longtime columnist and operative from the Republican Party. As you've heard him through the years, he's conservative through and through, but no fan of the former president, Donald Trump, who continues to dominate the headlines. And Melissa Flournoy, longtime Louisiana leftist, head of Louisiana Progress, also now in charge of a group called 10,000 Women. And she is with us to talk about the midterm elections, 6 weeks away, along with Quinn. 43 shopping days left. And Quinn, let's start with you, based in Mobile, Alabama. How's it looking in the midterms with the November 8th election getting closer and closer?
It's looking like both, until this past week where the House Republicans did something semi-good, it was looking like both sides were in a competition to see who could shoot themselves in how many appendages, because both sides were acting both politically and substantively stupid, and neither one was doing much to appeal to the general electorate. So how it all broke down, I don't know, because it just depends on who wins the race to the stupid.
Melissa, let's get your take. Democrats generally don't do well, neither do Republicans for that matter, when their party is in power in midterms. But Democrats have really taken it on the chin in some of these midterm elections when a president has been elected 2 years prior. Clinton in 94 saw the House go dramatically the other way. Obama in 2010, same thing. Is Biden headed for a shellacking on November 8th? Your thoughts?
Well, you know, I think it's going to be much closer than people realize. I'm not sure what all Quinn was referring to, but I think we've got great Democratic candidates for the U.S. Senate. I think we'll hold the Democrats will hold the Senate. And I think they very well may hold the House of Representatives, but it's definitely going to be close. So this is not a red wave, and it could be a different outcome than sort of the historical expectations. So I think there's some good Democratic candidates around the country, and we actually have some good Democratic candidates in Louisiana with Tia LeBrun and Katie Darling. If they'd started earlier and raised some money and had been able to be more effective in their campaigns, I think they'd be closer to 40%. I think they may not make it to that level, but, you know, good candidates and money, that's what it's all about.
Well, and 40% gets you absolutely nowhere in politics. You got to win the election. And the South, as we know, has become a harvesting ground for the Republican Party. Donald Trump is 21-1 in the 11 SEC states in two elections. Georgia is a state many are looking at, and I have a poll from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution that in many ways is fascinating. Stacey Abrams, who lost narrowly 4 years ago for governors in a rematch with Brian Kemp, he's 8 points up, 50-42. And in the Senate, Quinn, the much maligned Herschel Walker, according to the Atlanta Journal-Constitution poll, is now 2 points in front of Raphael Warnock. I would think if Herschel Walker wins in Georgia, it's not going to be a good night for Democrats. That means they quite possibly and almost likely will lose the Senate if Walker wins in Georgia. Your thoughts?
My thoughts are that Herschel Walker, almost despite himself, is probably going to pull it out in Georgia, but that doesn't necessarily mean that the Republicans will pull out the Senate, because I hate to say it, but nationwide, the Republicans have probably the worst group of challenger nominees or open seat nominees in living memory. They have consistently nominated people that were endorsed by Trump that have no business in the Senate, and that are very, very weak general election candidates, which is why Melissa might be right that that the Democrats might well just barely hold the Senate. I don't think Democrats will hold the House, but the Walker race, yeah, that makes it easier for the Republicans to win the Senate if Herschel Walker hangs on. But even if he does, it's certainly not a done deal.
Well, Georgia's the state that presumably is becoming purple, but it's a largely conservative state. And Melissa, I'm looking at abortion rights in Georgia. You'll like this number. To protect abortion, as opposed to limiting abortion, 48 to 25 for abortion rights in Georgia, 23-point difference. But then when you get to issues, abortion is fourth behind jobs and the economy, immigration and border security in Georgia, cost of living, and then abortion, and then crime, and then guns, and then climate change. So the issues that are near and dear to the progressive movement are not front and center. It's about jobs and the economy, and Democrats right now are not playing a real strong hand in on that level. What your observation about what will determine who wins or loses come November 8th?
I think it's about voter turnout. I think it's about people getting to the polls and voting. I actually think that Stacey Abrams and Raphael Warnock are going to surge close to the end and will win in Georgia. Georgia is an interesting state because it's much more diverse than, say, Louisiana, and has a lot more new people moving into the state. Jobs and economy are the bread and butter issues. People want to have enough money to buy groceries. They're worried about inflation, all of that. But I also think people are worried about fundamental rights, like the right to vote and have their vote be counted freely and fairly. I do feel like access to abortion and other rights are important and will mobilize people to turn out in the next 40 days. So I think a lot of these elections are going to be super close, but I'm cautiously optimistic, frankly, because the Republican Party has no message, and the Republican Party in many of these states are so tied to Donald Trump that the more trouble he gets into, hopefully people will have a little buyer's remorse.
Well, I'm looking, a threat to democracy is also on the list of issues. It's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8th. Ahead of COVID-19, but your position, Quinn, you've run for office and you've been in campaigns. What's ultimately going to be the trigger issue or two or three in this election?
Trigger issue, first of all, the economy is terrible. People will blame that on Biden, and to an extent they will blame it on Democrats. The next issue is crime, which people are really angry about, and they will blame on Democrats. And the next issue is parental rights, which is what swept Republican Glenn Youngkin into an upset victory last year in Virginia. That issue also favors Republicans. So on the three top issues, Republicans have a clear advantage in terms of who the public blames or praises. But as you said, the more Donald Trump stays front and center, the less people will concentrate on what Republicans are pushing substantively, and the more they will recoil in horror at the thought of a party dominated by Donald Trump. And that's what is keeping Democrats, at least competitive right now, despite those top three issues leaning in the Republicans' favor.
And on some issues, the economy is doing better than one might think. For example, I turn the page. Georgia's fiscal 22 tax surplus hits $6.6 billion. Now, that's COVID money, and it's $6.6 billion surplus for Georgia. It's like that in Louisiana, it has a surplus. The budget deficit is down from $2.8 trillion to $1 trillion in 1 year, and yet the Democratic Party is not touting the good things that are happening. We were hearing a lot about inflation, and we're hearing about a recession, which may or may not be in the offing. Maybe we're already in a recession, But Melissa, it's the old axiom that James Carville said, it's the economy, stupid. It would seem that if voters are going to vote on the economy, it could be a bloodbath for the Democratic Party come November 8th.
Well, I'm not feeling it, Jim. I think the economy is important, but I think voters understand that there's a lot more at stake, the future of the country, the future of the state. You know, I'm not impressed by this commitment to America document that the Republicans came out with the other day. You know, it's mom and apple pie, but it doesn't translate into how's it going to make your life better. And so, you know, I actually feel like in Georgia and in some of these swing states where the Senate races are really in play, that the Democrats are going to pull it out. And I think that we need to, you know, appreciate that momentum.
877-217-5757 and talk at talklouisiana.org. Back after this. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Robin Dow is our producer, and your number is 877-217-5757. Talk at talklouisiana.org is our email, and a listener bid on Melissa's prediction that Stacey Abrams will win in Georgia. Right now, it doesn't look like that's going to happen. She lost by just 55,000 votes in a large state, less than a percentage point to Brian Kemp, 4 years ago, and there was a voter purge, and she claimed that the election was not fair, and she came back, and she is very popular in progressive ranks. But a poll that I saw over the weekend, it's fascinating that in Georgia, which of course is a southern state, more whites are trending voting Democratic there, unlike the rest of the South, where now 80 to 85% of the whites are voting Republican. But on the other hand, more blacks are voting Republican. Stacey Abrams may very well lose this race because she's only getting 78% of the black vote. And that 78, Kemp is over 20, and it is an amazing phenomenon, Quinn Hillier. And maybe it would be a good thing if we didn't vote so monolithically in the South based on race. Your thoughts?
It would be a great thing if we did not vote according to race on both sides. In fact, it would be a great thing if we stopped obsessing about race on all sides, if we stopped looking at every issue through the lens of race. It would be a great thing. I've got to say, in Georgia, Stacey Abrams has absolutely no chance whatsoever to win. Raphael Warnock does have a chance, but Stacey Abrams is too far behind. She's too liberal. She's too much of a sore loser, and Brian Kemp is a very popular governor, so she has no chance of winning.
Well, Donald Trump was the ultimate sore loser, and yet the national polls show him, if the race were held today, he would beat Joe Biden. Sometimes the squeaky wheel gets the grease, Quinn.
One national poll shows that he would beat Joe Biden. Others show it, you know, all the polls show it would be fairly close. What that is choosing the worst of two evils. If you drill down into the polls, people would be really upset with that as their choice. And that doesn't say much for Donald Trump. It shows how unpopular Joe Biden is.
What do you make of Donald Trump saying that he can declassify documents by just thinking about it?
Nonsense. Absolute, total, 100% nonsense. It's so beyond nonsense. It's so beyond stupidity as to, I mean, words fail. So I'll just stop there because words fail. It's that stupid.
Yeah, I always agree with Quinn when we start talking about Donald Trump. I mean, it's, you know, it's just beyond common sense what's going on with the former president now. And frankly, I think the tide's turning against him from a legal standpoint across the country. And I just think now his word salad is really turning off, you know, anybody with any range of, you know, relevant concern for the future of the country.
We got to wonder if they had any copy machines at the White House. If he really wanted to take those documents, he could have made copies, I would think, and just walked out with them, and nobody would have known about it. But instead, he took the actual documents, Quinn.
He took the actual documents. He hasn't explained why he wanted the documents. There's no excuse for him having the documents without letting anybody know that he was taking them and why. But speaking of word salad, I got to say, Joe Biden has had so many instances of word salad just in the past month that, you know, that you've got the biggest salad in the world. Look, let me get back to one thing that Melissa brought up, because I referenced it in my first answer without naming it. The House Republicans have done something pretty good in the last week, and that is the commitment with America, which Melissa pans. But it might not be the greatest document in the world, but it draws very sharp contrasts. And when Republicans start campaigning on two of those points, one on energy and second on parental rights, if they stick to the energy and parental rights sections of their national commitment to America, it will draw a clear contrast that favors them against Democrats. So look, and Steve Scalise of Louisiana had a lot to do with it, and will have, if the Republicans take over the House big, Scalise will deserve some of the credit.
Melissa?
Well, I actually think Steve Scalise is likely to be the next Speaker of the House if the Republicans take over. I'm totally unimpressed by McCarthy, and I just don't think he's got the energy or the sense to really lead the Republican Party. So I think Steve Scalise could be the big winner if the Republicans take over. I think this parental bill of rights, I have no idea what they're trying to communicate. But the point I wanted to make out of the commitment to America is that I think the Republicans are coming for your Medicare and your Social Security. And I'm really worried about sort of the long-term implications of this right desire to privatize and move away from the safety net programs for the elderly and people over 65.
Show me where that is.
All right. We need to get to the phone lines. We've got a lot of people waiting in line. Tim and Thibodeau. Tim, you're on. Good morning.
Thanks very much. Thanks to your guest, Jim. All I want is a comment on whether the T-shirts, I've heard it on two feeds, both major, the T-shirts featuring "It's Cool to Be Cruel, Republican."
All right. I don't. Is that kind of like "Vote for the Crook, It's Important"?
I'd never heard of that.
I'll tell you, I think that's part of what has me upset about the immigration policy and DeSantis and Greg Abbott, is that there is, the point is cruelty on putting asylum seekers on airplanes and sending them to cities where they don't know what's going on. The stunt to send people to Martha's Vineyard. I mean, that's really upsetting, is that, you know, the cruelty is the point.
All right, Ray in Prairieville.
Oh, come on.
Ray, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Thanks for taking my call, Jim. And thank you for bringing up the issue of race in political races. I believe that a lot of white Republicans vote Republican because they think that the Democratic Party is black. And I'd like to hear your commentators talk about that.
Well, Quinn, in the Louisiana, the Democratic Party is now a majority black party. That doesn't mean every Democrat in the state is black, but some people do not want to, who are white, do not want to be affiliated with the Democratic Party, and I'm sure race would have to be one of the factors.
I think we are very, very slowly, all across the country, moving away from the idea that race determines votes. You are seeing it in those polls in Georgia. You actually saw it in a higher than expected black vote for Donald Trump in 2020. You are seeing it certainly in the vast move of Hispanic voters from Democrats to Republicans. But you are also seeing it in the other direction by your hyper-educated whites, the ones that have gone to graduate school and gotten poisoned by graduate schools are moving much more strongly to the Democratic side. So the more this happens, the less we'll be able to talk about, less we'll have to talk about race, and more we'll just have to talk about what you really think about the issues, and I think that's a good thing.
Well, we may be moving in the right direction, but in the South, we have a long way to go. Melissa, I think race certainly plays a factor in elections in this region and in this state.
Oh, I agree. And I think Donald Trump has made it okay to be a white supremacist. I mean, I think the Republican Party is more racist and more mean-spirited in the last decade than it was for the last 30 years. So I think there's just race is such a hyper-polarizing topic. I agree with Quinn. I wish we could take a deep breath, assess the policies, make more rational decisions, and the hysteria around racial polarization, I think, is bad.
Gwen Hillier was with us for a little bit longer, as is Dr. Melissa Flournoy. 877-217-5757 is your number. Still time to get in. And emails to talk at talklouisiana.org. Back after this time out with more Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Inkster. Pleased to have you with us for Talk Louisiana. Signature support from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services and from Jerry Lane Chevrolet. Robin Dow producing. Quinn Hillier on the right side of the political spectrum. Noted columnist from a national bent. He's now writing again, and we're thankful for that, for the Advocate and Picayune. And Melissa Flournoy, head of Louisiana Progress and also 10,000 Women. 877-217-5757 is your number. And we're headed for the home stretch, 6 weeks from tomorrow, November 8th election. What will happen in the midterms? Carol in Jefferson Terrace. Carol, you're on with Quinn and Melissa.
Yes, I'm wondering what the Democrats have to do to get the media to quit allowing the Republicans to control the narrative. Take oil, for instance. We export more than we import, but yet they're blaming the price of oil on just the opposite, which is not even happening. Economy, right. We got plenty of good ideas on the economy that we could be bragging about, but yet when they mention energy, that favors Republicans, and that's all you hear.
All right. Well, Quinn, are Republicans winning the battle of talking points?
Well, I wish that the Republicans were winning the battle of talking points. I don't agree with the caller. I think the establishment media parrots the Democratic talking points again and again and again. The size of our oil export advantage has significantly reduced under Joe Biden. Joe Biden has completely gone to war against U.S. fossil fuels, and that is going to be a very big issue in the fall with not just gas prices, but home energy prices as well, and that will favor Republicans.
All right, Melissa, what about who's winning the narrative?
I think the narrative is so, the media, it's just messy right now. I don't think that there's clarity on the Democratic side. I think the Republicans are dominated by Trump conflict. And I think here in Louisiana, we've got to realize that we are an oil and gas state, but we need to diversify as we move forward in the 21st century. And so I think we've got to have a both-and approach to oil and gas, protecting domestic energy production, but also looking at renewables and expanding sort of the modernizing everything about energy moving forward. And so, you know, I think that there's a real opportunity to talk about issue with a great deal more clarity. But I want to talk about John Kennedy and John Kennedy's election, because I actually think Luke Mixon has done a good job as a moderate. I think that he's going to peel off a number of white voters from John Kennedy. And I'm hoping that John Kennedy might be forced into a runoff if people get out and vote. Because I just don't think a lot of folks think he's done a good job.
Well, that's another tilting at windmills thing. Democrats should have gotten another Republican in the race if they wanted a runoff, and that did not happen. And Quinn, I would imagine that's why no national money is being infused in this campaign. Now, Kennedy's raising money on his own like crazy. He's up to about $50 million. $50 million, but the Democrats are like $1 or $2 million. Chambers and Mixon, Your thoughts about whether John Kennedy's in any kind of trouble?
John Kennedy is in no trouble whatsoever. He has played his politics very well and has shape-shifted from center right to far left to fairly far right without somehow losing credibility with the home state voters.
Well, a listener makes a good point. You're in Alabama. You got a guy like Jeff Sessions, who's the real deal. Sincere, he's been consistent, and he goes down for the count. His career is pretty much over as an elected official. And then you got a guy like John Kennedy in Louisiana, who has veered in a generation from a liberal Democrat to an extremely conservative Republican, and he's doing it well. How can that happen?
He has done it. I'm really not sure exactly how he's gotten away with it, but he certainly made a name for himself with his cornpone accent and all the rest. And but you know what it boils down to is he's voting for and saying or advocating the things that the vast majority of his constituents want. And when you do that, you tend to win re-election, and he will.
Well, Melissa, you're no fan of Senator Kennedy, who once encouraged successfully Buddy Romer to veto two bills to ban abortion, and now is the biggest champion of life in the U.S. Senate, and does it with a straight face.
Yeah, I think my problem with John Kennedy is just that he's a caricature of his former self, and I do think that. You know, I want people to believe in things. I actually still, I guess, am cautiously optimistic and overly naive sometimes that I want politicians to believe what they say. And I just don't think John Kennedy believes anything anymore. And so that's really what upsets me, because 30 years ago, he was a nice, yuppie, little lawyer, pro-choice Democrat, and I don't know what he is today. Well, today, he's, you know, foghorn leghorn.
Well, so, he believes strongly in one thing, and that's John Kennedy, and it's working well for him, the way Donald Trump believes strongly in one thing, Donald Trump, and for most of his life, it's worked pretty well for the Donald. Now, another listener, Quinn, asked, why in the world could the Louisiana Republican Party censure Bill Cassidy for voting to impeach Donald Trump and not censure David Duke? Your thoughts?
I wrote a column on that about a year and a half ago, a special column for the Advocate Picayune, and I made that very point, and that is a stain on the local Republican Party. I hate to say it, and I've got to admit that. I do want to get back to oil and gas. Biden shut down the Keystone Pipeline. Biden canceled a whole bunch of oil leases, both offshore and onshore. If you don't like high energy prices, you've got to blame Joe Biden and the Democrats.
As though those things would change the inertia of the war in Ukraine.
Yeah, I was about to say, I don't think either of those things have really affected the bottom line, but I'll spot you that we need to have a much more robust conversation about energy in Louisiana and the future. And we've got to move past some of this, the simplistic, you're either for oil and gas or you're against it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just think, you know, real life is way more complicated than sound bites. And I have to be optimistic, Jim, about the future of Louisiana and the future of people who believe in women's rights and the right to vote and the right to public education, because I think those are bedrock principles that people ought to organize around. And I'm really frustrated by censorship, book bans, attacks on women, and attacks on democracy and freedom. And I think those are the messages that we need to be focusing on.
Patricia in Magnolia Woods. Hi, Patricia.
Good morning. So my question is, Senator Kennedy, as far as I can tell, gets on TV a lot and votes Republican, but otherwise does not really do a whole lot in the Senate. So I was wondering if y'all think he will run for governor, which would require a lot more work.
All right. Kennedy is positioned well if he so chooses to run for governor next year. He is about to be 71, meaning he would take office as governor as 72. If he served two terms, he'd be 80. But Quinn, today, that wouldn't be that uncommon. Your thoughts about whether the dance has gone by Senator Kennedy if he wants to be governor?
Kennedy might be the most popular politician in the state. If he ran for governor, he would have a very good chance of winning. It would be a very big disappointment to Jeff Landry and to Billy Nungesser if he did, because it would make it much tougher for them to win. But, you know, Kennedy's going to think about it, and if he runs, he might win.
Melissa, next year, could you embrace Governor Kennedy?
Oh, Lord have mercy. I mean, I guess I'd rather have Kennedy than Jeff Landry, all things considered. But, you know, here's the deal on Kennedy. He's always wanted to be governor. He's run several times. He ran several times for the Senate before he ran. He's a career politician. I think that he'll stay in the Senate if the Senate is a Republican majority. If it's not a Republican majority in the Senate, I think you might see both John Kennedy and Bill Cassidy seriously consider running for governor. And I don't think the governor's race is set yet, so it'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
One of them, one of the senators, if not both, but probably one of them will run for governor, and that will determine a lot about who else runs. But a listener asks about a story. Will Sutton of The Advocate wrote a column about it. In fact, it's right under Quinn's column, I believe. Yep. About Bill Tate, the president at LSU, saying, every student newspaper article in all the systems, if you pick up them, 95% of the information is negative. The negative instinct is overwhelming in journalism. They cannot help themselves. Bill Tate's no fan of the media, and he, of course, has eschewed the opportunity to be on this show. And he's encouraged some board members not to be on this show. Your thoughts about the president of LSU, who's supposedly on the left side of the political spectrum, pouncing on the media, Quinn?
Well, even as a member of the media, if you just talk about the establishment media, I think it deserves to be pounced on.
You think it deserves
Sorry,
to
I
be.
Think it does a terrible, I think it does a terrible job.
But saying 95% of the information in the Reveille is negative, and he did apologize for that, but
I don't know, because I don't get to read the Reveille.
Every student newspaper, he's a guy who doesn't like the media, and he's never been in the media. He has no idea about what he's talking. Just like I wouldn't have a lot of ideas about how to do his job, but we'll talk about this in the days to come. It's always a pleasure to hear from Quinn Hillier and Melissa Flournoy. Robin Dow saying it's time to call this segment a day, and that means we're calling it a day with Melissa and Quinn, but we'll be calling on them again soon. Thank you so much. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. A few minutes with the man from Swine Palace, Vastine Stabler, who's been with us many times through the years, and that means when he comes on this program, there's a major production in the works, and there's one coming very soon to the fine entity at LSU. Tell us more, Vastine Stabler.
Well, we got a really exciting show, which is kind of why I wanted to come in here. There's this play called Airness that happened to be written by an LSU theater graduate from, I don't know, about 20 years ago, Chelsea Marcantel, who actually was a student when I was in grad school and owned it for it. And she, of all things, got interested in the competitive world of air guitar, and which there is a big community, and it goes all the way to national championship and world championship. And this play follows a disparate group of competitors as they work their way around the regional competitions, and then their relationships and family. It's very funny. It's really fun. There's a lot of air guitar clips in it. And we brought in a guest star named Matt Burns, who happens to be the 2-time world guitar champion.
Air guitar champion, right?
That's right.
All right. Well, this is a special art. I suspect you've spent a lot of time perfecting it.
Oh, absolutely. Born and raised, air guitaring, jumping on my bed since I was 2 years old, getting yelled at by my mom. Who knew that it would lead to a burgeoning career? Pretty stoked about it. we're here doing Airness at LSU. I'm very excited. It is the biggest, boldest, and dare I say greatest show that LSU will ever be putting on. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of fun. There's a lot of lights. This show is more of an experience than just your average day at the theater. It's more like a rock concert. The audience is encouraged to cheer, to get up, to air drum in their seats, to have a great time, and it's an absolute blast.
Airness, that's the name of the show, and the air guitar champion, Matt Burns, is front and center. Where are you from, Matt?
I'm from Staten Island, New York, born and raised, and I have been fortunate enough to travel the world melting faces and blowing minds with my high-octane rock. And how I've been in Finland, China, and now I'm in LSU, baby.
How did you get to LSU?
Through the grace of Chelsea Marcantel, LSU alum, who wrote a fantastic play, really, really captured the essence of what it is to have fun, to just enjoy music, to get lost in the sauce, and to have an absolute blast.
And you're joined by Hannah Wolf. And Hannah, you're a big part of this as well.
Yeah. Chelsea put my name in to direct this show. And I'm so excited to be here and be able to do this big spectacle piece and really like have some fun with the choreography, with the music, and with the lights.
Well, this guy who's the air guitar specialist, he's a pretty energetic fellow.
Yes, he brings a lot of energy to every rehearsal. Every single rehearsal.
It's how could you not be? You know, when you have some of the greatest rock songs ever playing, and you're rocking out as hard as you can to them, how could you not have a lot of energy? I know. I think you're a little bit of an air guitarist yourself, there, aren't you?
I could probably be coaxed, but
my guy.
at any rate, when did you start this? Was this like 6 years old, 8 years old? When did it happen?
Give or take. I've been air guitaring my whole life. Competitive air guitar for me started in 2008. I found out about these national competitions, got absolutely hooked on them, and since then I've been everywhere doing it.
Well, you could be an air guitar Hall of Famer.
Oh, and I am. Class of 2014.
2014. Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of, Bastien Stabler is from a heritage of a Pro Football Hall of Famer named Kenny the Snake Stabler, who went to another university in the Southeastern Conference. But you've been a part of this Swine Palace thing for a number of years, and this is the 30th anniversary, I believe.
Yeah, so, that's right. Though technically this is going through the confusion of going through our LSU Theater moniker instead of Swine Palace. Though we do have Swine Palace coming back for our 30th year for operating systems later this year.
So this has a different headline. It's LSU School of Theater rather than Swine Palace.
Yeah, usually we don't come for those shows, but this is so much fun.
A rose by any other name.
Yes.
Is still a rose. But COVID was a setback for these kinds of things. And I know you're enthused. You're here without a mask. Times have changed. And both of our guests are maskless. And I would think that many people who have been yearning for this kind of production are really eager to see Airness.
This is really the first semester that we've gone back to our normal system and having a full show and doing full performances. So we are, as he would say, stoked about
Matt Burns and Hannah Wolf. And Hannah, how big is the cast?
We have a cast of 7.
Well, Matt is like enough to be 7 people in one.
He could be like
Eddie Murphy in The Nutty Professor.
Too kind.
He really gets everybody else up to his energy level.
But it's easy. I mean, the whole cast is fantastic. The entire crew is amazing. The lights, the sound design, everything about it, top to bottom. It's an absolute blast to work on this show.
And for those who would like to know how they can go to the LSU School of Theater production of Airness, what's the way to do it?
You can go to the LSU Theater webpage, and right at the top, you got a picture of our graphic. Click on that. We've got tickets. We got Pay What You Can on Thursday. The opening night is on Friday, and then we run through the 9th.
And showtime?
It's 7:30 on evening performances, and then we have Sunday matinees at 2.
And this one is at the...
This is at the Riley. This is at the Shaver Theater in the Music and Dramatic
Arts. The main theater right there on the way to Tiger Stadium. So it's Airness, and this is a week in which LSU will be playing on the road at Auburn. The Tigers are 7.5-point favorites, but there will be another major production, and you'll see the Hall of Famer, Matt Burns, air guitar, great one.
It's going to be an absolute blast. I mean, if you're a fan of rock concerts, this is the show for you. If you're a fan of theater, this is the show for you. If you're a fan of just banging your head and having a good time, this is the show for you.
All right.
And it's a great show if, like, you want to check out theater and it's your first time coming. This is a great entry point.
Thank you, Hannah. Thank you, Matt. Thank you, Bastien.
Thank you.
And today is September 26th, and it was on this date for many years that I would interview the great Jack LaLanne. Talk about a Hall of Famer. He was into fitness before fitness was cool. First American to really advocate lifting weights, and he was in magnificent physical condition his whole life. He did die at 96 in 2011, but at 95, he was still bench pressing his weight, and he was, of course, the pioneer of bringing fitness to the small screen. When television was in its infancy, Jack LaLanne became an international star, certainly an American icon. And I told him how my mother used to work out with him leading the charge on television. He said, yeah, your mom and I spent a lot of time on the floor together, Jim. But here he is, back in his day, Jack LaLanne, born on this date, September 26, 1914, 108 years ago. He was a man like no other. Here we go, Jack LaLanne.
And now, here is the man who will show you how to feel better, look better, Jack LaLanne.
Good morning. Happy Monday morning to you. Thanks very, very much for letting me come into your home. You know, my name is Jack LaLanne, and I'm here for one reason and one reason only, to show you how to feel better and look better so you can live longer. Please, keep your dial right where it is, because I want to become real good friends with you. You know, there has been so much talk of late about the importance of exercise, the importance of better nutrition, the importance of positive thinking. All of these things we are going to learn together. I like to consider myself as your personal physical instructor and your health consultant, coming into your home every day. You know, and there's also many of you students who say, Jack, I know that I need exercise, but, well, it's too boring, it isn't any fun, and I can't do it, or I'm too old. These are all excuses, because I'm going to be here to show you how much fun and how easy exercise, well, I don't like to call it exercise, I like to call it gymnastics, how much fun it really can be, and I want to show you that you can do it. Does that make sense? I'm going to show you how you can firm up your bust line, how you can take down your waist and firm up your hips, how you can get rid of those ugly pounds, all of these things from me to you. Are you with me? Now, I'm going to show you just how easy and simple and how much fun this all is. Now, get up on your feet. That's it. And give me a great big smile. All right, that's it. Now, stay right there. Now, put your hands on your hips. Now, first, take your right leg lifted up, then your left leg. Now, I'm sure you can do that. Ready? Begin. One, two, three, four. One, two, and up and down. And one, and two, and three, and four, and rest. One, two, three. Now, that wasn't very hard. Remember, now, this is our first day together. I don't want you students to overdo. We're just going to take it easy, just like climbing up stairs. One day we take one step at a time. One step, two steps, three steps, four steps. And before we know it, we're right up there where we want to be. All right. Now, how would you like a good movement to help to firm up the thigh right along in here? Huh? Would you? Put your hands on your hips. Now, take your left leg and just extend it right out to the side. Ready? Begin. One, two, three, four, one, two, and three. That's it. Two, three, one, two, three. All right, the other side. Let's go. One, two, three, four. Out and in and out.
My hero, Jack LaLanne, when he started doing his thing, people thought he was crazy. Said he was a sugarholic. Once tried to burn his house down when he was a kid, but he got his life under control, and he did it with exercise and discipline, and he was working out until the end. He wanted to live to be 100. He said if he didn't make it to 100, it'd be bad for his image. Well, I think his image is pretty good shape. He died at 96 in 2011, and we miss Jack LaLanne every day, every year on his birthday, September 26th. In 1979, when he turned 65, he towed 65 boats near Tokyo. He was handcuffed and shackled. The boats were filled with 6,500 pounds of Louisiana wood pulp. And then in 1970, when he was 70 years old in 1984, he towed 70 rowboats, one with several guests, from the Queensway Bridge in the Long Beach Harbor to the Queen Mary 1 mile. Jack LaLanne. He practiced what he preached, and he knew what it meant to make America great again. Talk Louisiana enjoys signature support from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services and Jerry Lane Chevrolet. For Rob and Dow, back tomorrow, same time, same place. Stay safe and stay tuned.